Good afternoon. My name is Anne Cavallo, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board of Volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. Today we have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. For those also connected via webcast, you can connect or you can ask questions, submit questions through the Q&A portion near the end of the session or throughout the presentation as well. There'll be a box on the lower left-hand corner of your screen, and you could submit the questions there. Once again, 2019 is a year that BCEA continues to expand our mission of providing breast cancer education resources. This year's educational programming continues to encourage, engage, and empower those affected by breast cancer in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year. Participation in and support of culturally appropriate cancer screening education and outreach programs to reduce disparities in the burden of cancer. We are very excited to report that three mini conferences focused on reducing these disparities and offering resources and education are being held this year. One mini conference was already held, another is planned for June 12th at the Cora McCorvey YMCA, and a third will be offered later this year. Also, through our signature education conference, which is scheduled for October 5th at the Wilder Foundation in St. Paul, Minnesota. This conference will deliver the most up-to-date information on breast cancer diagnosis and treatments and a mobile mammography unit. Conference will feature Dr. Keith Knutson updating us on the newest developments on a breast cancer vaccine. Please mark your calendar for October 5th, and we hope to see you there. Finally, through increased ongoing resources on our website and social media channels, which are available 24/7. If you are unable to attend any of our previous webinars, recordings of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at www.breastcancereducation.org underneath the webinar tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information at your convenience. We also invite you to join us for a little fun and participate in our upcoming partner fundraising and education event, Happy Hour with the Girls, Giving Cancer the Boot, on June 20th at Baldman Brewing in Lakeville. Visit our social media channels or website for complete details. The BCEA also welcomes your involvement in our organization. We welcome participation on all levels and have many different types of volunteer opportunities available, whether it's just for an hour a year or a couple hours a month. We have exciting plans and hope that you can help us deliver education and empowerment to those fighting breast cancer. If you have not done so already, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using the hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please also be sure to keep your eye out for more information on other upcoming webinars, including our next session featuring author Diane Davies, which will be happening in late June. We will share more specific information on all upcoming sessions as soon as details are available. And now I'd like to introduce the speaker for today's webinar. Dr. Tricia Prescott is a board-certified diagnostic radiologist who specializes in breast imaging. She received her medical degree from the University of Minnesota in 2007. She then went on to complete a diagnostic radiology residency and subsequent breast imaging fellowship at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Prescott has been practicing as a breast imaging specialist with Midwest Radiology since 2013. In 2018 and 2019, she was recognized in Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine as a top doctor's rising star. Welcome, Dr. Prescott.
Hi, thanks, Anne. Hopefully you can hear me. Feel free to interrupt me, Anne, if there's any technical issues. So I'm Tricia. I'm a breast radiologist, as Ann said. I work with now Midwest Radiology. We used to be St. Paul Radiology, but we recently had a merger, so there's a new name. But anyhow, I've been here since 2013 and working primarily in breast centers. And my job as a breast radiologist is basically to find and diagnose breast cancer with imaging. So that's what we're going to talk about pretty much all of the areas, almost all the areas of breast imaging today, so there's a lot to cover. So I hope I don't go too quickly through some of these things, but at the end there's an opportunity to ask questions if you think of things. So let's see. First here, just going to talk about some of the things we're going to talk about today are reasoning behind breast cancer screening. Why do we screen for breast cancer? Just a basic understanding of the different imaging tests that can find breast cancer. And then understand when these tests are best used and what situation. So the specific topics that we're going to cover is, first I'm going to go over the breast cancer, just some numbers from breast cancer facts out there. Screening mammogram, screening mammography, that takes a little bit longer. There's a lot to talk about, including 3D mammography, breast density. That's all kind of part of mammography. And then we're going to talk a little bit about breast ultrasound, breast MRI, touch on molecular breast imaging, and then a little bit of other miscellaneous things. So first, just some numbers on breast cancer. So this information comes from, it's from the National Cancer Institute. They kind of update this information yearly. They, they follow all these numbers in the U.S. as far as how many new breast cancers we're having or estimated. You know, the number can't be exactly accurate, but they have a good handle on how many breast cancers are out there. So in 2019, they're estimating there'll be about over 268,600 new cases of breast cancer. And it is the most common cancer in women. So out of women that are diagnosed with breast cancer, how many may actually die from the disease? And this is, again, an estimate from the National Cancer Institute. They estimate 41,760 mortalities or deaths due to breast cancer. So it's important that we find this early when we can have the best chance to cure it. So just some more facts. A lot of times I'll talk to women and they'll say, well, I have no family history, so I'm not really worried about it. But 3 out of 4 women who end up getting breast cancer do not have any family history. So it's not something that we want to ignore, even though there's no family history. And then 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. So it's not uncommon. And 1 in 69 women will be diagnosed in their 40s. And the reason that's kind of a separate point is there's some controversy, which I'll speak to a little bit, about when to start screening mammography. And in the 40s is kind of the controversial decade of women's lives. So it's less common in their 40s, but it definitely happens. So let's talk about just screening. So what's the goal of screening? The goal of screening for breast cancer is to save lives by finding it early when the treatment is more effective and less harmful to the patient and has a better chance to be curable. So in order to find breast cancer, it has to be a certain size. It has to be a certain size to be detected on imaging. It also has to be a certain size to have symptoms from it. So screening mammography has the ability to detect it early, before you have symptoms. So if you weren't doing any screening and just waiting to have symptoms, usually, typically the size of the tumor would be bigger than a tumor found on screening mammograms. So you detect it before you have any symptoms. And then the earlier detection, it has a better chance to be curable. There's a lower risk that it will have spread anywhere else in the body. So that's kind of the reasoning why breast cancer is beneficial to women. There's a number of tests that can detect breast cancer. There's mammograms, ultrasound, MRI, molecular imaging are kind of the main ones that we think about. You know, you may think of some other imaging tests like CT scans or CAT scans. Those are not good for breast cancer detection. They're not really used in breast cancer imaging or breast imaging because they're not that sensitive looking for breast cancer. So those 4 tests I'm going to talk about a little bit more. First, we're going to talk about screening mammograms. So screening mammography is one of the most studied tests ever. There's so much data on it, and a lot of the data came from, you know, the 80s and 90s. And at that time, their mammograms probably weren't as good as they are today, so we can speculate maybe it's even better than the initial data now because technology has improved. But it's the only screening test that has been proven through multiple studies to decrease mortality from breast cancer. So that's the important thing. It's the one test that's been studied and proven to show that it works. It helps save women's lives. And since 1990, the mortality from breast cancer has decreased by 40%. That is huge. It's a combination of things. Part of it is we're better at finding it, and that has to do with screening mammograms and other tests, and they're better at taking care of it, better at treating it. So it's a combination of things, but screening mammography has definitely contributed to that decrease in mortality. So, you know, I just wanted to make a quick point about screening versus diagnostic imaging. And when we're talking about breast tissue, screening study, there's different, you know, there's screening MRIs, there's screening, which we're going to talk about the different types of tests, but just thinking of screening patient in general should be somebody who doesn't have any new breast symptoms, just is their normal self, but they're just doing a screening test to make sure that there's no sign of breast cancer. Now, that is opposed to a diagnostic imaging, which means there's something that a question we need to answer. Either they have a new symptom, like a new lump, or new nipple discharge, something is going on, and we need to assess why that's happening, why you're having that symptom. Or the other reason for diagnostic imaging is if we see something abnormal on a screening test. So let's say you have a screening mammogram, and we see something that catches our eye. It may be nothing, we're not sure, but it looks a little different in an area, then we would call the patient back and say, hey, we need to do a diagnostic test because we need to evaluate this specific spot that we're noticing on the screening exam. So then that's diagnostic, where we're basically trying to answer a specific question. Why do you have this symptom, or what is this finding on the screening study? So those are the differences between screening and diagnostic. And the main take-home point, screening studies should be done in women who do not have any new symptoms. If you have new symptoms, especially if they're focal, then they typically would be evaluated with diagnostic imaging. So the next slide here, just to talk a little bit more about size at detection. As I said before, the earlier you find it, the better chance that it's curable. So this is just goes over the stages of breast cancer. I'm not going to go too much into detail, but there's different stages, and you can see, you know, stage 1 and 2, stage 0, 1, and 2, the survival rate is high. When you get to be stage 3, that's when it's starting to spread to different sites farther away, and especially stage 4, then the survival rate goes down. So this is just to show you it is important to find it when it's small. So this particular information on this slide says, you know, if we find them when they're 1 centimeter, there's only a 10% chance they have spread to the lymph nodes. If we get to 2 centimeters, then that goes to 35% chance. And if you get to 4 centimeters, then it goes to 60%. So the bigger the mass or tumor is when we find it, the higher chance that it may have spread somewhere. So that's why screening is important, to find these when they're small. And this is just a picture of the screening mammogram unit. A lot of you on the phone have had these before, but the breast is in compression. We typically take 2 different views of each breast for a screening mammogram. So, you know, limitations and downsides. When there's some debates going on about when to start screening and the downside, you know, the pros and cons of mammography, the upside is huge in my mind because it can save lives if you can find it early when it's curable. But there are some downsides that people talk about, so I want to address those. Mammography is good. Like I said, it's the only test that's been studied so much and proven to decrease mortality, but it's not perfect. It detects most breast cancers, but not everyone. There's a small number of women where the mammogram looks normal. Usually those are women with dense tissue, but there is a breast cancer in there. So it's not a perfect test. The downsides are when we see something on the mammogram, we would recommend additional tests. I talked about diagnostic imaging, and sometimes that may lead to a biopsy. And maybe everything we find is benign and non-cancerous. So at that point, we've put the patient through some additional testing. Usually they're minimally invasive and well tolerated, but they cause anxiety, and there's a cost to additional medical tests and just going through that procedure. So that's the downside. We may find things that we have to look into and maybe even biopsy, and it may be benign. So that is a downside. The upside is if we find something and we find a breast cancer, hopefully we find it early when it's curable. And then radiation, a mammogram does have some radiation. It's a small amount of radiation. It's very small. I'm going to show you a slide here soon that kind of goes over the dosage of radiation. But it's very small, so the risk of the radiation is a very small risk. So the risk from the mammogram is far lower than the likelihood that we may find a breast cancer in women 40 or older. So the chance that the radiation is going to do anything bad to you is much less than the chance that a patient is going to end up with breast cancer. So if you bring pros and cons, the benefit outweighs the small risk of the radiation. So if you're not getting screened, the odds of dying of breast cancer become higher. Hopefully that makes sense there. So this is the slide I was talking about with radiation. So you can see screening mammography is down there towards the bottom. It's the third one up from the bottom, 0.5. So we're talking about the doses of different imaging tests on this slide, and I just wanted to give you an idea. You know, different imaging tests have different radiation doses, and one point I want to point out, I think they have just background radiation on here, annual background radiation. It's the sixth one up. So you can see just living your life and walking around, there's a small, in the atmosphere, there's a small amount of radiation. If you fly on a plane, it's even higher. So if you do a lot of cross-country flights, it's even higher. But you do get a background dose of radiation just living on Earth. And you can see that's higher, significantly higher than one screening mammogram. So the dose is very, very small. I just want to show you this slide to put it in perspective. As opposed to some other imaging tests do have a fair amount of radiation. They're still considered safe when they're used appropriately, when they're used, you know, to evaluate something in particular or whatnot. But just wanted to get some perspective of the radiation dose. It's very small. On here, they have 2D and 3D mammography. That's if you're using, and I'm going to explain it a little bit more in 3D. There's a newer technique where you don't have to do both the 2D and 3D, and that brings it back down to the level around the 0.5 of what a screening mammogram is. So anyhow, the point of this slide is it's a very small dose and the risk is very small. So screening recommendations. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I could talk hours about this, but it always used to be, you know, back before, I think it was 2009 when the recommendations started getting changed from various groups, it always used to be start at 40 and do it every year. And now there's differing of opinions on how we should screen women. So here are all the just kind of the main groups that provide recommendations. There's American Cancer Society, ACOG is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, American College of Radiology, Breast Surgeons, NCCN, which is the NCCN gives a lot of guidelines for cancer treatment. They're definitely an important group. And then the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, that's takes a look at overall primary care screening tests. They assess, give recommendations on those. So those are all the experts. And what do they say? They don't all agree. So it's confusing for women. And we have age to start. When should you start doing them? How often should you do it? And when should you stop doing them? Like I said, it always used to be starting at 40 back in the early 2000s and 90s. It's just kind of in the last 10 years where it's become more debatable. The American College of Radiology, Society of Breast Surgeons, and NCCN, that's that National Cancer Network, they all recommend starting at 40. There's kind of a middle road here, American Cancer Society and ACOG, that's the obstetrician and gynecologist. They say start talking to women at 40, see what their risk factors are, offer it at 40, and then if they decide not to do it by 45, American Cancer Society says definitely start by 45 if they don't start at 40. And then ACOG just says, talk about it at 40, but for sure make them start by 50 or have them start by 50. And the United States Task Force says you don't need to start till 50. I had that slide with stats of women in their 40s. It's less common in women in their 40s, but it's certainly not rare. We see it a lot in the breast centers, women in their 40s. So to me, I'd say start at 40. There are downsides to mammography, but to me, the upside of potentially saving a life is huge. And younger women do tend to get, you know, compared with older women, faster growing breast cancers. They're usually premenopausal. That can cause the growth to be at a faster rate. So that's another reason to get screened. So anyhow, those are just I just wanted to outline the different recommendations based on each group. And the frequency is, they kind of go along the same line. The people who recommend starting at 40 also say to do it every year. The middle of the road kind of groups, they are middle of the road in that the American Cancer Society says do it every year from 45 to 55, and then you can maybe back off and do it every other year. A lot of that is due to menopausal status. But some women postmenopausal do get fast-growing cancers, so, again, it's less likely. But, you know, there's just there's some risks involved with less screening. And then the task force does every other year. So age to stop, you know, I think the best way to look about it is kind of these first two sections. If you're healthy and your life expectancy is 5 to 10 years, or longer, it makes sense to screen. If you've got a lot of medical problems and the life expectancy is only 1 or 2 years, then it may not make sense to keep doing mammograms. The task force says 74. That's kind of a number picked on data, but one 74-year-old might be completely different health than another 74-year-old, so I think it's hard to just pick a number. I think it's more on the health of the patient. So anyhow, I would suggest starting at 40 and do it every year because, my next slide, they can all agree you save the most lives if you do it that way. Yes, there can be some downsides to it. Like I said, you may need an additional test if there's something abnormal, but the upside is you may save a life. So that's why that's what I recommend. So I'm going to talk about 3D mammograms next. 3D mammograms, they're also known as tomosynthesis. This is kind of the technical name of them. Probably heard about them in the news more. So what a 2D standard mammogram, which is kind of a classic mammogram, is two views of each breast, one from the top and one kind of a side-to-side view. What the 3D mammogram does is it uses a special X-ray technique. So we, instead of just getting those two pictures of each breast, we get a lot of pictures stacked on top of each other. So it kind of marches through the breast tissue in a 1 millimeter section. So you might start, your first image might be at the top of the breast, and then you go down by a millimeter, so you have a bunch of images, and more kind of like a book. You can see the pages of the book going through the breast more detailed. So that is the idea behind a 3D mammogram. So why is it helpful? Well, it does two things. It's been shown to have two benefits. One is that it decreases false negatives. That means we see a mammogram, it looks normal, but there's really a cancer in there. That's a false negative. Because the reason that can happen is typically because it can be hiding in some dense normal glandular tissue, so it can kind of get masked by normal tissue. And that can happen, you could imagine, like I said, the standard mammogram is just two views of each breast, one from the top, one from the bottom. So let's say I have normal tissue in the upper half of my breast, but it's very glandular, very dense, I'd say. And then in the lower half of my breast, there's a little tumor in there. Well, when you take that picture looking through the breast top down, it's all going to be overlapped on each other. So that little tumor could hide in that dense tissue. So what the 3D mammogram does is you can look at it layer by layer, so it helps uncover some of that masking effect. And the next benefit of 3Ds is false positives. So that means we call you back because we have to look at something, and then we find that it's just normal tissue. It has been shown to decrease the rate of needing to come back. And the reason that is because when tissue's overlapping, it can create an illusion that something is going on. It might catch our eye. But when we have the 3D, it can help kind of show us that, oh, no, that's just overlapping tissue. We don't need to look closer at that. So those are the two main benefits. This is kind of the same thing that I just described. So basically, decrease false positives, like I just said, where you think you see something but it really turns out to be nothing, and then decrease false negatives. Decrease the ones you're calling normal when it really isn't normal, when there really is a breast cancer in there. So that brings me to breast density. I talked about that overlapping tissue breast density has been in the news in recent years because there's more and more laws, that legislation about notifying women of their breast density. Here's just the example from our reporting system of breast density. So there is, these have changed. This is an older slide because it says 1, 2, and 3. They updated it. It now says A, B, C, D as far as the tissue density. But on the far left is the fatty breast. That you can see the fatty tissue is kind of, we describe it as lucent. It's a darker shade of gray. You can pretty much see through it. As we progressively go to the right, you see more and more of that brighter, whiter tissue. That's normal glandular breast tissue, and some women have more of it than others. Normal glandular tissue is white on a mammogram. Breast cancers are also white on a mammogram. So you can imagine that picture on the far right, if there's a little white spot that's a cancer, it can just kind of hide in there. So that's why women with more dense breast tissue, mammograms are a little bit trickier to interpret, and they're not quite as sensitive as women with fatty breasts. But they are still definitely useful in women with denser breast tissue, especially if we get 3D, it's very helpful. So that's just an overview of breast density. In 2014, Minnesota passed a law that we have to notify women if they have dense breast tissue. So that means that the top two categories, the we call it heterogeneously and extremely dense, those two pictures I had on the right side of the screen, I'll go back one. So those two on the right, level 3 and 4, which are now called C and D, those women we have to notify. And really that turns out to be close to half of all women. So close to half of all women are getting these letters. So it doesn't mean anything's abnormal if you get that letter. It means that's just who you are and you fall into the upper half of density. So we have to tell women they have dense breasts if they fall in those upper two categories, and we also have to tell them that dense breasts may make it more difficult to find breast cancer and that there has been some associated increased risk for women with dense breast tissue. Increased risk of breast cancer. It's a small increase, but there has been some data to show it is increased. Is yours jumping around? Hold on. Let me get back. Okay. So if you have dense breast tissue, you get that notice in the mail. Now, again, that's about half of all women almost. Do we need to do anything more? So for the standard of care for a person who doesn't have any additional risk factors, routine screening mammograms is the standard of care. I suggest to women with dense breast tissue, it's good to kind of know how your breasts feel, just know what's normal for you, and if you notice any changes, let your doctor know. You know, even self-breast exam has become controversial in some recent medical recommendations because there's been a trend to recommending against self-breast exams. I personally think they're helpful. I think women are good at finding their own, I've met a lot of women who found their own breast cancers by noticing lumps in their breasts, so it's hard for me to say don't do that, especially when you have dense breast tissue. I think it's good to know how your breasts feel, and if there's changes, let your doctor know. So the other thing that some women consider, I'd say that's a minority of women, but some women may want to opt for additional screening. If you have other risk factors and are high risk, then we would suggest additional screening. That would be strong family history, meaning first-degree relatives like moms, sisters, with premenopausal breast cancer. So if you have a mom or sister, someone diagnosed young, like in their 30s, 40s, early 50s, then those people we start to think of, okay, they have other risk factors. Maybe we should do some additional screening on them. But some women with no additional risk factors, just average risk, want to have additional screening. And so there's some other tests that could be considered. Usually insurance doesn't like to pay for these additional tests. So there's typically an out-of-pocket expense. And I just want to say, we talked about 3D mammograms. They are, some insurances are covering is getting better. They're typically just performed as part of a routine screening exam. It's not an extra test. You don't go get a regular mammogram and then go get a 3D. It's just when you have your mammogram, you opt for the 3D one. And we usually encourage women to check with their insurance before they come in. If it's not covered, the cost isn't huge, but it is a cost. It's somewhere around $100 to add the 3D. Don't quote me on it, because depending on the coverage, it can be slightly variable, but in that ballpark range. But hopefully more and more insurances will be covering it. So let's say you have dense breasts and you want to do some additional screening. What should you do? So I'm just going to compare kind of the three more mainstream tests here in breast imaging. So 3D, you could consider that as a supplemental imaging for, or supplemental, yeah, screening. Like I said, it's not performed as a separate exam. It's just when you get your screening mammogram, you opt for the 3D. That's TOMO. So on here, the studies have shown on this far left box, if you add 3D, if you get a 3D mammogram, so we're comparing these tests to regular 2D screening mammograms. So if you get a 3D compared with women that are getting 2D, it finds some additional breast cancers that the 2D exams couldn't find. That's that. There's a range, 0.7 to 2.7. It's just kind of a statistical range. But somewhere along those lines, you find a few more breast cancers than you would have found if you didn't do the 3D per 1,000 women. And then I talked about decreasing the need to come back for additional testing. If we see something, it's better at calling normal, so there's less callbacks. We call that the recall rate. What about ultrasound? Ultrasound also finds additional cancers that a standard mammogram wouldn't have. A little bit better, 2 to 4 additional breast cancers that compared with mammograms alone, 2D mammograms alone. There's a kind of a good side or a big downside to screening breast ultrasound, which has kind of prevented it from becoming more mainstream in our community, is that there's a lot of false positives. The studies have shown if you go looking all over in the breast tissue with ultrasounds, you find a lot of things, and a lot of it is not breast cancer. So you end up with more follow-up tests and more biopsies. So that's kind of the main downside of screening ultrasound. And then MRI, what I want you to notice here, because I think this is an impressive performance, is that MRI finds 15 additional breast cancers that mammograms wouldn't have. That's compared to like the few extra 2 to 4 that 3D and TOMO is finding. MRI can find 15. So it's finding breast cancer early before any of these other tests can find it. MRI really is the most sensitive test for breast cancer. It is MRI is kind of a big deal as far as the test. It's a big piece of expensive equipment. You have to have a contrast. You have to have an IV started. It takes about 40, 45 minutes to do it. It's a big test. So it's not indicated in average risk people given everything that goes along with MRI. But high risk women, it is recommended to get screened with MRI in addition to mammograms. There's also, you can do something called abbreviated MRI, which is for average risk women who say, hey, average risk women with dense breasts that want additional screening, that say, I know I have dense breasts, I personally want to have another imaging test done. And then there's something called abbreviated MRI where they've shortened the exam time to make it so you're not on the table 45 minutes. Usually it's more like 15 minutes. And it's a quicker exam. It's so that they decrease the cost and decrease the time on the table to try to make it more accessible to women. It's still a significant cost. It's somewhere around $500 to do abbreviated MRI, but MRI is the best at finding breast cancer. So anyhow, those are kind of the differences in the additional imaging tests that some women may opt for. Ultrasound is usually. Yeah, go ahead.
Can we just visit 3D?
Yep.
Because we did get the question, and you may have covered this, and I may have missed it. But one question that came in is why 3D pictures are sometimes not covered by insurance, even though the doctor highly recommends patients to do that. Can we revisit that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been involved in some of this in the past of trying to get these approved for coverage. You know, the insurance companies want to have a lot of data to prove that it works, that it's a useful test. There are a lot of studies out there now. You know, 3D is relatively new. I think one of our hospitals was one of the first sites to get it, and that was in 2012. So it's a newer technology. So when new technologies come out, there's not a ton of data. So the insurances can call it what's called experimental. This hasn't been proven yet. There's becoming more and more data to support it. So I think as time goes on, assuming the data stays positive for as far as how it's helpful to women and helpful at finding breast cancer, I'm hopeful more insurance companies will change. And Medicare does cover it, and usually Medicare is kind of the big one that once they start covering it, then the other insurance companies usually fall behind or fall in line with that. But it's been kind of a long process, and slowly they're getting more and more coverage for women. And it's talked about at legislation levels too, you know, should insurance companies be required to cover this? You know, that's always up for debate as well. So anyhow, there's a lot of factors, but I think it's moving in the right direction to getting more coverage. But a lot of it is just having the data to show that it works and then kind of forcing the insurance to, you know, acknowledge it as a useful test. But anyhow, so
yes,
that's
– thank you.
Hopefully that's an answer. Yep.
It is. Thank you.
Okay. So the one last point I was going to make, ultrasound is usually a lot of times an out-of-pocket cost too. It would be cheaper than the MRI, which is the abbreviated MRI. I don't have an exact cost for that though. So those are the additional tests that one may opt for after when they have dense breast tissue, put it that way. So I just wanted to show you a case. I had this in one of my previous talks because this is just a good case that I've saved. And we see cases like this a few times a year usually. But this is a patient who had a screening mammogram. She has dense breast tissue. You can see she has a lot of that white tissue in there. These are the 2D pictures. Looks pretty dense. You know, nothing really jumping out. So then she had TOEMOL, so she had the 3D mammograms. Now, this is a really, really subtle finding, and it's unless you look at mammograms all day, I don't think it would really catch anybody's eye. But for breast radiologists who do look at mammograms every day, this little subtle finding caught our eye. You can see on the left-hand side is the standard 2D picture. The right-hand side is a single slice, one of those 1-millimeter slices. So it's a single slice where a certain area of the breast is in focus. And that's where the finding is. It's on the left picture. I think my next one will point it out here. It's very subtle. So the picture on the left with the circle, that's circling the area. The right is really just magnified and zoomed in. Now, like you said, this is a very, very subtle finding, but it did catch our eye. We brought her back from the screening to look a little bit closer. On the zoomed-in picture, let me see if I can – yeah, never mind. Hopefully I didn't interrupt you guys. Seemed like point out. But anyhow, in the center of the picture, the area looks distorted, what we call it, meaning it just looks like it's kind of pulled in a funny direction. And that's what TOEMOL is good at, finding that distortion where it kind of almost has a starburst appearance where it's pulled a little bit funny. It's very subtle on that view. This is a zoomed-in area of the 2D picture, and then this is that selected slice. Just shows a little bit more detail. And it's kind of right in the center of the picture there on the right-hand side. It almost, if you get a sense, there's little lines kind of coming from a central area. That's the distortion. You really could never pick that up on the 2D view. So this patient, we brought her back. We looked closer. We ended up doing what we call stereotactic biopsy. These are just the side-to-side views. I'm going to go kind of quickly through those. There's that area on the side-to-side view. It's very subtle. We did a biopsy of it. Ultimately, that area was a invasive lobular carcinoma, so it was an invasive breast cancer. And you'd think, oh, that's so small and subtle. And it was very small. The thing is, it was an important cancer to find because even though it was small, it had already gone to a lymph node. There was a micrometastasis, meaning very, very small. You can only see it with a microscope. But it had already gotten out to a lymph node. So this patient, you can really say this probably had a big impact and hopefully saving her life, you know, because if she didn't have the 3D, I don't think there's any way anybody would have noticed this finding. And we can't predict what would have happened without it. So if she would have went another year, what would have happened? Went another year without getting this found? How much would that have grown in that year? We don't know. Luckily, we did find it this year when she came in. And so she's doing well. And that's just this is a case that really highlights of 3D mammograms, how, you know, we don't see cases like this very often, but a few times a year you'll get one like this where you are really happy you had the 3D, and it really does a lot of good for the patient. This is just more pictures of that. I'm going to move quickly because we got a few more things to talk about. Ultrasound, I'm not going to spend too much time. Most people know what ultrasound is. Like I said, there's diagnostic, and that's typically what in our community what it's mostly used for. Meaning we do ultrasound because you either have a focal symptom, like a new lump. Sometimes we do it for focal pain. lumps are in general more concerning than pain is. But we do diagnostic to evaluate his focal symptom, or if there's an abnormality on the mammogram, we'll do a targeted ultrasound over the area that the mammogram shows the abnormality. The screening breast ultrasound, like I said, there's a downside to it. We find a lot of stuff in the breast tissue when we're scanning all over in both breasts. So there's kind of a debate, and there's no clear consensus on it. A lot of places don't do it because of the high false positive rate, meaning it results in more tests for women. It does help find a few more breast cancers, but there's a significant downside, which is all the additional testing. So you know, they're getting better at trying to minimize the additional testing, but it's still kind of a gray area as far as becoming any sort of standard of care. We don't offer it at our breast centers because of the false positive rate. And then MRI, like I said, this is this point on here, the most sensitive test for breast cancer, meaning it can, if you take 1,000 women and you give them all mammograms or all ultrasounds or all MRIs, MRI is going to find the most breast cancer. It's just, it's the most sensitive. But like I said, it's also kind of a big ordeal to get an MRI. So it's not indicated for everybody. Women with greater than 20% lifetime risk, because of risk factors, there's some genetic mutations, chest radiation, usually that's for Hodgkin's lymphoma, some things like that, high or family history, like we talked about. If there's a greater percent, 20% greater than 20% lifetime risk, it is recommended you have annual MRIs in addition to mammograms. There's these risk calculators that that can be used to figure out what your lifetime risk is. We also do it quite commonly in our practice for newly diagnosed breast cancer. If you have let's say we found a breast cancer on a mammogram, we ended up with a biopsy, then a lot of times the surgeons will get an MRI before surgery to look for anything else, because we know that MRI is really good at finding stuff, that just to make sure there's nothing else going on in either breast before they have surgery. So we do it a lot for newly diagnosed breast cancer. Occasionally, with this third point down here, some people refer to these as problem-solving MRI. We don't use that a lot in our practice. Sometimes it raises more questions than it answers, meaning if you see something on the mammogram or you're not quite sure, maybe you get an MRI. Some practices use it more in that way than others. We don't do a lot of problem-solving MRI in our practice. We try to either answer the question, not raise more questions. I'll put it that way. A lot of times we find it isn't helpful because it doesn't answer your question. But there are some indications, some clinical symptoms where we do recommend it, like if you have spontaneous bloody nipple discharge from one breast, and we don't see anything on the mammogram or ultrasound, that symptom is worrisome enough that we would recommend additional testing with an MRI. And then the other thing that MRI can do is look for implant ruptures. So
Dr. Prescott, we did get a question on MRI. So mm-hmm. The question is coming in. It says, what is the rate of false positives with breast MRI? And the person asking the question said that she would think that because the test is more sensitive, that there's a risk that it's significantly higher, and that needs to be considered.
There are false positives in MRI. There are. So false positive, again, is when we see something that turns out to be nothing, but we have to test it further, like do a biopsy or something. Especially when people are getting their first MRI, I do kind of warn them about that. There can be false positives. That's the downside to it. It's not as much as the screening ultrasound the data has shown. The false positives aren't as impact. There's just not as many of them in MRI as opposed to screening breast ultrasound, but they are there, and they are something to consider. Because it can result in additional testing. It should be, I mean, I don't have the data right in front of me, but there's kind of benchmarks of, you know, what your callback rate is, how many you should be biopsying. But the false positive rates should be not too high, but I want to say kind of similar to mammograms, put it that way. So, you know, we do have to call back. In general, we bring back about 1 in 10 women undergoing screening mammograms. Of those women called back, then a small portion of them are biopsied. MRI should be similar to that. There are false positives, and that is a downside to it. But the data suggests that it's less, though, than ultrasound. So abbreviated MRI is what I mentioned, an additional imaging test for women with dense breast tissue is in general what it's used for. Women who don't qualify for high-risk screening based on risk factors like genetic mutations or family history, basically women who don't really have any significant family history or genetic abnormality, but they have dense breasts and they want to do something more, then abbreviated MRI may be an option. That's what I mentioned earlier. It's decreased scan time, and it is decreased cost. Basically, what's really expensive for MRI is the scan. Those scanners are super expensive, so any time on the scanner is cost money. So that's what they call it, abbreviated. They've taken the most important parts of the long version of the MRI and pulled those out separately, and they've studied it and shown if we just do these, this is still reliable to find breast cancer, and we can reduce the time in the scanner. So that's kind of what the abbreviated MRI is. There's an additional cost, somewhere around $500 for those. So I'm going to show you, this is an MRI case. Try to hurry up because I'm running short on time. This patient had, she was a high-risk patient, so she's getting high-risk screening. She had a mammogram that was normal. This is just the two views. This is the side-to-side view. The one I just showed you was the top-to-bottom view. And then she had a screening MRI, so because she's high-risk. So on her MRI, I just kind of want to show you how it works. We do a set of images of the breast without any contrast, that dye that goes into through the vein. So this is the pre-contrast image. This is just showing us her breast tissue. It looks pretty, nothing jumping out at us. The bright spots in the middle of the breasts are, that's dense glandular tissue. The darker area around it's breast fat. So she's got dense breast tissue, as we know from her mammogram. Now we've given her that dye on the right-hand side. And you can see there's dye in there because you see the heart, it's all lit up there. That's the heart. So the dye, the contrast we call it, is in your system now. It's in your circulatory system, so it's traveling through the body. And you can see, this is similar to what when you get CT scans, they use that kind of dye. It's a little bit different dye for MRI, but similar idea. So you can see now, and the way we look at the breast, the breast on the right-hand side is actually the left breast. It's like you're looking from someone's feet up towards their head. So the spot lighting up, that's the left breast, but you can see that really lights up with that dye. Now, if you compare back to how it looks before the dye, you can't really see anything in there that looks different than anything else. It just looks like dense tissue. And now we gave her this dye, and that area is really lighting up. And so we do what we call a subtraction image. I'm going to go back to this one. What the subtraction image does is it takes the pictures with the dye, and then it subtracts out, it takes the pictures that you took before you gave her the dye, and it subtracts everything away. So all you're left with is only where that dye, the contrast is, or the dye. And so that's what these subtraction images are. So now we've taken out everything, and most everything's turned black now in the picture except the contrast. You can really see the heart and blood vessels there, and now you can really see that spotlight up. So we look at these subtraction images, and this is what we would look at for when we're looking at breast MRI. And we look at all of them, but subtraction is a very important part of it. This just shows you kind of a very clear abnormality there in the left breast. So she came back after we saw this finding there on the MRI. She came back, and typically when we see something like this, we say, okay, I bet if we looked closely in that area where we know it is, we could probably find a correlate with ultrasound to use ultrasound to biopsy it, because we typically do ultrasound-guided biopsies if we can. So she came back, the ultrasound of that area, and you can see here there's a dark spot in the center of the screen, and they're measuring the distance between it, just under 2 centimeters. So she had that abnormality where she had that abnormality on her MRI. So then we could do a ultrasound-guided biopsy of that area, and that's an invasive breast cancer. And I just want to go back to show her mammograms again. Now, this breast cancer, it was what we call occult on the mammogram. It was hiding in that dense tissue. And then I think I show you where it's at. This is after the biopsy. That's just we put a biopsy marker in it so we can see where it's at. So we know that's where that mass is, but it's just kind of camouflaged there in that dense breast tissue. So this is a case just trying to highlight where MRI is useful in dense breasts. It really showed that mass very well. And it's hiding, that mass is hiding there on the mammogram. I'm not going to talk much about my next imaging test, molecular imaging. We're almost running out of time. We don't do it here. I know Mayo does a fair amount of molecular imaging. It's a test done kind of like abbreviated MRI or screening whole breast ultrasound. It's a test a lot of times done as an additional test for women with dense breast tissue. So they have dense breast tissue and they want something additional to look for breast cancer. Requires an IV is started. There's an injection for these. They inject what we call a radio tracer into the vein, and it travels through the body. And then they put you on this we call a gamma camera, and it watches for uptake of that radio tracer, and it takes pictures of the breast. So it's used for, like I said, additional screening in dense breasts. Also, let's say somebody has a worrisome finding, clinical finding, but the mammogram and ultrasound are normal. Then maybe they'll check it with this molecular breast imaging to see if anything's going on that. And the insurance is variable if they'll cover it. And there is radiation dose with that. It's more than a mammogram. It's still safe. It's still pretty small, but it is more radiation than a mammogram. But the benefits, it's considered safe. It's considered a safe dose, and the benefits outweigh the risk. Here's just a picture of a breast with, on the left-hand side of the set of images are the mammogram. On the right-hand, that's a molecular breast imaging that really highlights that there's something going on there. This is a little breast cancer. And the last thing I want to touch, because now it's social media, there's information is traveling back and forth all over the web. We get asked a lot about thermography. Thermography, there's no good data to support its use. They've studied it. It hasn't been shown to be reliable. I think it can probably pick up some breast cancers sometimes, but it's not a reliable test. So the FDA has put out all these warnings, should not be used in place of mammography to screen for breast cancer. If you go to their website, these are just some statements that they have on there. Just reiterating, there's no valid scientific data to show that they are reliable to test for breast cancer. So it's not recommended. We don't have it at any sites. But sometimes people will ask about it, or sometimes they'll come in with a thermography report if there's an abnormality. But it's not something that we perform or recommend. And then this is kind of the big thing. And so they have this on their website, too. They're concerned that people will believe some of the claims about thermography, that it's just the best test. And I've read some people's blogs and things that say it's, you know, do it because there's a little bit of radiation in mammograms, and do thermography, it's so much better. But there's just not data to support its use. And so the concern is that people will pick that test and it'll miss their breast cancer, and it could lead to unnecessary deaths. So that's the concern on my part for thermography, and that's what the FDA has on their information on thermography as well. So anyhow, I just wanted to touch on that. And that, I think, is the last thing. My last point is, like I said earlier on, mammography is the only test that has been proven to decrease mortality from breast cancer, so increase survival. So we recommend screening mammograms on women over 40. And then just a summary. I think this is the last slide. Like I said, screening is the only test proven to decrease mortality. So women who have other risk factors, we recommend screening mammograms and screening MRIs. You can't get rid of the mammograms. If you're doing MRIs, you still would do both. And then average risk women with dense breasts, just the screening mammograms is still the standard of care. Some women may opt for additional imaging, but a lot of times it's an out-of-pocket cost. And I would suggest to women with dense breasts, especially if you have insurance coverage, get the 3D mammograms, because there's really not a downside to it. It's just a better detailed look at the breast tissue. If there is an out-of-pocket cost, then you kind of have to weigh that with your own personal finances and things that, you know, we don't want people to put themselves in a bad financial situation to try to do these imaging tests. So anyhow, if you have coverage for 3D, get it. It's a great mammogram. And then what else? Diagnostic imaging, any new breast symptoms, tell your doctors. And usually that would start with a mammogram and ultrasound if there's a new lump. And that is kind of all of my stuff. I'm almost running out of time. I don't know if there's time for questions. Or
Dr. Prisca, we do have a few questions. So a couple of these build upon each other and cross some of the same questions. But basically, if you have a history of breast cancer, what do you suggest for screening?
So if you have a history of breast cancer and you have other risk factors, you know, you may fall into that greater than 20%, which would be mammograms and MRIs. But there's another set of guidelines that came out recently from our American College of Radiology that is, I think that's, these are pretty straightforward. If you've had breast cancer and if it was diagnosed at less than 50, before the age of 50, then they recommend screening mammograms and screening MRIs. So if it's diagnosed at an age under than 50, so relatively young, then they would suggest MRI in addition to mammograms. The other thing is if you have dense breast tissue, heterogeneous or extremely dense breast tissue, and you have a history of breast cancer, they also recommend screening MRIs for women who have dense breast tissue and a history of breast cancer. If you do not have dense breast tissue and you're over 50, then it's more of a gray area, and probably most women just get screening mammograms if they are in that situation.
And then something as a follow-up, and I'm is a question came in that after a mastectomy, what is the best way to screen for breast cancer?
So after mastectomy, you know, we follow the NCCN guidelines. That's the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. And most places do follow NCCN. They do not recommend imaging tests for screening. The recommendation is just physical exam. So having annual, yearly physical exams and reporting if you have any changes, any new lumps, things like that. But there's no official imaging test that's recommended after mastectomy for screening, that is.
Thank you. So two other questions at least came through. So going back to the whole MRI, is there a difference in insurance coverage for screening MRI based on the various guidelines for screening?
Yeah, different insurance companies are different. So some are more, I don't want to say lax, but more don't, will cover it more on softer indications. So sometimes, though, we'll get women, it really depends on your insurance. Sometimes we'll get women who seem to have a pretty good indication for MRI, and their insurance is denying it. And so sometimes you have to write letters to say why it's indicated. So everybody's insurance coverage is a little bit different, but it is a given kind of agreed upon thing, the greater than 20% lifetime risk, women who fall into that category based on family history or genetic mutations, then it is typically most insurances have to cover it in that situation. But there's some gray areas where some insurance companies might and some might not. And so typically they call and check before it's scheduled to see what the coverage would be.
And then a last question I think that we have time for is who performs the thermography in light of the FDA statements that you just noted?
I don't really know specifically who. I haven't looked in our community like who's doing that. Usually it tends to go along of more naturopath kind of providers. I think there's a lot to be said for naturopaths medicine, but in this particular situation, thermography is not helpful. But usually it's some like a natural medicine type of a provider. And I don't really know, I can't say specifically, you know, this service or that service, but it's not main, you know, you wouldn't typically never find thermography in a breast center or hospital system, kind of your big, what you think about with healthcare. You typically would not find thermography because there isn't any data to support it. It's more like natural health type places that would have that, I would say. I know that's vague, but that's kind of the setting we typically see it in. And I don't mean that as a negative towards them. I'm just speaking specifically about thermography. There's other benefits that I know that some of those natural providers have, but in regard to breast cancer screening, thermography hasn't been shown to help.
Yep. Thank you for answering those questions. Gracious thanks to Dr. Prescott for everyone for joining us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and we hope to see you on the next webinar. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Anne.